Hello, good afternoon. After a series of what I think were very insightful discussions, we will now hear from NATO's leader himself, Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen, whom I was asked to introduce. Now, the first thing I did, as one does these days, was I checked him out on Facebook. And to my surprise, not only he was there, but he has 54,646 friends, 647, if I may. And there were pictures of his grandson, Markus, photos of the Secretary General in T-shirts and shorts running under the Lisbon Bridge a few months ago, I think. And posts that ranged from his meetings in Moscow and Kabul to the baptism of his grandson. Now, this kind of openness and personal exposure is not exactly what one expects necessarily from a former Prime Minister of Denmark that currently heads one of the most powerful military organizations. But it is refreshing and important, I believe, namely to render NATO closer to the citizens of its member states. For indeed, we are talking about a mythical organization that can intimidate, that's partly what it's there for, and that can still raise passions, which is not necessarily a bad thing. We have the demonstrations, but we also have a room like this one filled with young people eager to engage constructively in discussions with NATO and its leaders. We are, as has been said by many, at a historical turning point when the strategic concept commissioned by the Secretary General when he took office last year is finally presented. The level of expectation is naturally very high, and the challenges at stake are even higher. Is NATO to stay mainly a defensive regional alliance, or should it become a policeman in today's globalized world? The question of nuclear non-proliferation at the time when the Obama administration has called for a world free of nuclear weapons. The unveilment of a new strategy for Afghanistan when many soldiers, including Portuguese soldiers, are stationed. The development of partnerships to face today's new challenges and often transnational threats. The opportunity to establish a new relationship with Russia, rid of old Cold War stigmas. And if I may, coming from a human rights background and being a female, I would add the need to increase the role of women in matters of war and peace, namely at a time when rape has become a weapon of war in several conflicts. So I'm probably not supposed to do this, but I will take this occasion to call on you to work with the United Nations on the implementation of Resolution 1325 and to increase NATO's share of women in its civilian and military staff. Now, all of these challenges, titanic on their own, are even more difficult against the backdrop of an economic crisis that is affecting the defense budgets of many NATO members. But in my searches, I also discovered that the Secretary General is a keen cyclist. And cyclists are known for their endurance and determination, which I believe are key factors when one undertakes, as Anders Fogh Rasmussen did, the reform of NATO. So I wish you luck, Mr. Secretary General, as your success is in many ways our success as well. Thank you.
President Gomez, President Kempe, President Lamas, ladies and gentlemen, and first of all, thank you very much, Ms. Cardoso, for that very kind introduction. And thank you to the Atlantic Treaty Association, the Portuguese Atlantic Committee, and the Atlantic Council for organizing this event. It is indeed a great pleasure to appear before such a distinguished audience. As you know, we are gathering here in Lisbon this weekend to discuss how to deal with the security challenges of the 21st century. But one day soon, these decisions will rest with you, and I am keen to hear your views and opinions. Many of my generation look at security and at NATO through the prism of the Cold War. They think of defense in terms of big armies, heavy equipment, set-piece battles, country versus country. But I suspect that for most of you, the Cold War is like the Peloponnesian War, ancient history. Interesting, sure, but history all the same. You look at the world the way it really is today, with no Cold War hangover. And that is exactly what we all should do. Because our security environment today, your security environment, is completely different, even from the recent past. In Europe today, the threat of major conflict is lower than it has ever been. This is an historic achievement. And both NATO and the European Union can take some credit. We stood firmly in defense of our security and our values during the Cold War. And over the past two decades, we have helped spread peace and stability across our continent, first by creating partnerships with former adversaries, and then opening the door to partners to become members. That's the good news. But we now face a range of new challenges which affect us all, in NATO and beyond. And let me mention three examples. First, weak states halfway across the globe can have a direct impact on our security. They can be breeding grounds for terrorism, for drugs, for trafficking of weapons or people. And Afghanistan is an obvious case in point. We are fighting there because the Afghan people and the rest of the world have suffered the consequences. We are fighting there to prevent Afghanistan from becoming a safe haven for terrorists once again. But it's not just Afghanistan. Terrorists based in Yemen and Sudan have also launched attacks, including the bombs that almost took down a number of planes a few weeks ago. Second example, the steady spread of missiles. Some 30 countries have or are acquiring missiles that could be used to carry not just conventional, but also nuclear warheads. Some of those can already hit Europe, and the problem is getting worse. And third example, cybersecurity. We all enjoy the benefits of the information age. You take it for granted. Though I must inform you that there wasn't always the internet or bank machines or GPS, let alone iPads. And that's the point. We take it for granted. Our societies have become totally reliant on information technology. And the cyber threat against critical infrastructure in all our nations is growing every day. There are millions of cyber attacks every day targeting our banking systems, air traffic control, government services, and power grids. Those are systems we depend on and which we have to protect. These are all transnational problems, and they require multinational solutions. NATO is the preeminent multilateral security organization, which means the alliance can and must make a real contribution. And we are adapting to do just that. Our summit here in Lisbon this weekend will be a major step in that reform. We will agree an ambitious new strategic concept that will launch an alliance that will be more effective, more engaged, and more efficient. First, NATO will be more effective by investing in modern capabilities to meet modern needs. Afghanistan makes it very clear that while the military cannot be the sole solution to ensuring our security, it is still an essential part. That is why we will agree a list of the essential military assets our armed forces need. This will include, for example, helicopter transport, medical support, and countering roadside bombs. We will also focus more intensively on cyber defense. We will improve our collective ability within NATO to defend against cyber attacks. We will enhance our support to individual nations to allow them to better protect themselves. And we will look to step up our cooperation with the United Nations, the European Union, and other partners in this area. I also expect that the summit will agree that NATO develop the capability to defend Europe against missile attack. There is a clear threat. The capabilities to defend against those attacks exist, based on tested technology. And even in a time of fiscal constraint, we can afford it. Missile defense will bind the NATO allies closer together. And by reaching out and inviting Russia to cooperate with us, I believe we also have a real chance to build a security roof for the entire Euro-Atlantic area. Which leads me to our second priority, which is to ensure that NATO is more actively and deeply engaged with the wider world. NATO has gone through a huge evolution over the past two decades. We now have partners around the globe, countries and organizations. We have political discussions with them on issues of common concern. We support their reforms when they request it, and we deploy troops together in the field. We are plugged in. Tomorrow's meeting on Afghanistan will put that on display. It will be attended not just by all 28 NATO allies, but also 20 more non-NATO countries. And President Karzai, the United Nations, the European Union, the World Bank, and Japan. But we need to do more. And we will launch that here in Lisbon. We will beef up our partnerships, modernize our cooperation to focus more on what we need today, and reach out in the spirit of openness and cooperation. That applies very much when it comes to Russia. I'm very pleased that President Medvedev is coming here for a meeting of our NATO-Russia Council, because the time has come for a fresh start in relations between the NATO nations and Russia. I think Lisbon will be the place we make that fresh start. With more cooperation on Afghanistan, a shared assessment of the security threats we face today, and, I hope, a way forward towards cooperation on missile defense. NATO must not only be more effective in carrying out its missions and more engaged with the wider world. The Alliance must also be more efficient in how taxpayers' money is invested in defence. And that is the third priority for our Lisbon summit. I already mentioned how we are investing in key capabilities, including cyber and missile defence. This is part of a broader process of reform that we will give a boost here in Lisbon. It is all about cutting fat and building muscle, eliminating what we no longer need and investing where our real needs lie. That applies to NATO countries. It also applies to NATO as an organization. Here in Lisbon, we will take forward fundamental reform of the NATO command structure, the NATO agencies, and our headquarters in Brussels. Even though NATO is 61 years old, we will slim down, speed up, and become more flexible. Ladies and gentlemen, for all these reasons, because of what will be accomplished here in Lisbon, I believe it will be one of the most important summits in NATO's history. And I think the symbolism of doing it here in Portugal is important as well, because this country has always been a bridge across the Atlantic. I believe firmly that that bridge and that bond remains vital to our security today and your security tomorrow as well. Europe and North America have known more than six decades of peace and stability. But this has not come for free. It has required political vision and courage. It has required an enormous sustained investment in both political and financial terms to defend not just our territories, but also our values. And it has required, above all, strong transatlantic solidarity. The United States' political and military presence here in Europe has been a strong expression of that transatlantic solidarity, and it has been vital. History shows that Europe is at peace when the United States is part of European security. History also shows that together, Europe and North America are a powerful force for peace, not just for the Allies themselves, but for the international community more broadly. We must never forget that. We must preserve that relationship. We must invest in it. Ladies and gentlemen, dear friends, you are here in Lisbon because you understand the complex security challenges before our nations and because you care about finding the right solutions. That, to me, is enormously encouraging. But I'm conscious that as we discuss the challenges to our security, there are other young people who are directly confronted by these challenges. The brave young men and women who are serving in our military forces in Afghanistan. Many of them are no older than most of you in this room. The luxury of our security is in no small way thanks to them. And I would like to finish my remarks by paying tribute to all of them today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So we now have about a little less than 20 minutes for questions. Lots of hands popping up. We'll be taking blocks of 3 and 4 and then a second round. Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Secretary General, thank you for inspiring us with your vision. My name is Eyal Raviv. I'm from Tel Aviv. I'm the only delegate here from the Holy Land. And I represent MIPIS, a network of Palestinians, Israelis, internationals for Middle East peace. We need your help. What are your thoughts? Specifically, what can we expect from you to help support Middle East peace?
Thank you.
Hello. Mr. Secretary General, my name is Valery Krashenko, I represent Ukraine. And actually, I have a question concerning the prospects for Eastern Europe in frames of new strategic concept of NATO, in particular Ukraine. And is it possible for NATO to act more actively in this region with the partner countries and guaranteeing security and stable development in region, implementing practical steps, for example, mediating frozen conflicts in post-Soviet space. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Secretary General. My name is Gwansa Kwinikadze. I'm from Georgia. It's a great pleasure to have you here. And my question will build on what my colleague from Ukraine already asked you. I would like to use this opportunity and ask you about the NATO's open door policy and how it will be reflected in new strategic concept of NATO. And also, to be more specific, what kind of message should Georgia expect from Lisbon summit? Thank you.
Thank you. Couple more.
Come on. Good morning, Secretary General. My name is Radim Dragomaka from the Czech Republic. Let me thank you for taking the time to speak to us. It is a true honor. I've heard a lot about new and ambitious goals and some necessary purchases, and I think that these are all quite correct. What I did not hear about is new plans for funding. In the past, there has been a funding gap between the European allies and our American allies, and political commitments have in the past fallen short. At the time of the international financial crisis, other international organizations are looking to find solutions to making sure that their member states live up to their financial commitments. The EU, for instance, is taking legal measures to ensure that this works in the future. What is NATO's solution to this problem, and can it have a legal dimension? Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, I'm going to pass to the back just because I didn't realize there was a cue there. Go ahead.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
It's on? Great. Mr. Secretary General, I have two questions to ask you. One is about the constant talk that there is on EU-NATO relations, and that everybody is constantly saying that more cooperation must be done between these two organizations. And you are so well-placed, knowing very well Zaventem in Brussels and knowing very well Schuman as well in Brussels, where the European Union, as a former prime minister, you were working. So I would like to ask you, how can EU-NATO cooperation, first of all, if it was improved, what concrete effects would be on the ground noticed in Afghanistan, for example? And what are you going to be telling the heads of states, the European heads of states, during the summit about this? And what have you been doing since your Secretary General on this? And my second question is more internal, and it's about the tedious decision-making process in NATO that requires consensus, but one member state of NATO can block the whole process through its veto. And I was wondering, shouldn't that also be a question that the summit should be tackling? How can, from a practical point of view, can you make decision process easier for NATO to be more effective? Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, just again, one person from the back, and then I'll pass to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Secretary General, my name is Per Christian Krohn, and I'm from Norway. I would like to follow up on what Dr. Karl Lammer said with his morning speech earlier today. He said that this summit also is for NATO to knock on the young people's door, not only for the young people to knock on NATO's door. So I would like to use this opportunity to challenge you, to challenge us, and a bit follow up for the last speaker here. In times of financial crisis and in these difficult times we have now, countries tend to get more introvert in their actions, in their decisions, in their priorities. How would you advise us as young possible future leaders to build political incentive in countries to actually invest in international organizations like NATO and also invest in operations abroad of our home territory?
Thank you. I'm going to have to 10 minutes to answer all of them. And I know you're going to talk about Russia, but can we have a question on women's rights as well? Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to talk about EuroPro, so it concerns everybody. I represent Russia. My name is Natalia. Today, Russian President Assistant on Foreign Relations, Sergei Prikhotko, said that Russia is ready to build an integrated system of missile defense. But during your last visit in Moscow, you said that you don't believe in the possibility to build a EuroPro, combining Russian missile defense system with NATO missile defense system. So could you please clarify this point, this issue? Do we talk about united and integrated missile defense system, or we just talk about cooperation between two independent missile systems? Thank you.
Thank you. Last three questions, the gentleman in the back, all the way in the back, and then the two ladies in the middle.
Mr. Secretary General, my name is Tryggvi. I come from Iceland. I noticed that you did not mention the North at all in your speech, and I know that Icelanders and other Northward nations in NATO, such as Denmark, your home country, Norway, Canada, and U.S., are focusing on the North with the development of the melting ice and possibly opening up of shipping routes and access to resources. So I just wanted to hear you comment on how NATO sees that as a future development. Thank you.
Thank you. Two very last brief questions so that we can have a few answers.
Mr. Secretary General, thank you so much for being with us. My name is Marie Minilem from Belgium. First, I would like to second Joanna's request regarding human rights, and second, my question. Our dependence on oil is funding terrorism in many places, and we can't really drill our way out. Forgive the joke, but it would be like bailing out a Titanic with buckets. So my question is, can we dream, can we look forward to a green, very green, energy-friendly NATO?
Thank you. Last question.
Mr. Secretary General, hello again. We just met in the hall. My name is Irina Khalturina. I am from Azerbaijan. And my question is, now many policymakers and experts say that NATO needs to clarify and update its policy towards the South Caucasus region and especially towards the Azerbaijan. So I would be very interesting to listen to your point of view about this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to all. Mr. Secretary.
So, thank you very much indeed for a lot of very, very relevant questions. You know how to go directly to the point, and I like that. The first question concerns the Middle East and the prospects of NATO in engagement, or at least what could we expect from NATO. First of all, let me stress, NATO as such is not engaged in the Middle East peace process. Some of our allies are, obviously, we follow the development with great interest. We do hope to see substantial progress in the Middle East peace process. But of course, the question you touch upon is, could we envisage a future role of NATO? For instance, if there is a peace deal, could we envisage that NATO played a role in monitoring that and keeping the peace? First of all, the hard work must be done. to achieve a peace deal. But let's say that there is a peace agreement. Then I think we will need an international military presence in the region to make sure that this peace agreement is really implemented. Could it be NATO? It could be. But I have to say that certain conditions must be fulfilled. Firstly, that there actually is a peace agreement. Secondly, that the parties involved request our assistance. And thirdly, that all of this is mandated by the United Nations. I think if these three conditions are fulfilled, then allies will at least consider it. But we have no decisions in that respect so far, and I still think the parties in the Middle East peace process must do the first part of the job to actually reach a peace agreement, and I wish you all the best in that respect. Second question, and maybe second and third, they are related, Ukraine and Georgia. What can Ukraine and Georgia expect from the NATO summit and the NATO strategic concept? We will reaffirm the decision we took in Bucharest at the summit in 2008. And you will recall that at the summit in Bucharest, we decided that Georgia, and by the way also Ukraine, will become members of NATO, provided, of course, that they so wish and fulfill the necessary criteria. We will reaffirm that decision. NATO's door remains open. Having said that, we are also aware of the new Euro-Atlantic orientation expressed by the new president and new government of Ukraine, and we fully respect that. NATO is a voluntary organization. We don't force any country to join our organization. Our door remains open. That's our position. And as far as Georgia is concerned, I understand that Georgia has still the aspiration to become a future member of NATO. And we will assist Georgia in the reform process within the NATO-Georgia Commission. And as far as Ukraine is concerned, I had recently a meeting with the Ukrainian president, and he confirmed that Ukraine intends to continue cooperation with NATO within the current framework, the NATO-Ukraine Commission, and I appreciate that very much. So that's also what you can expect from the summit and the strategic concept, that we reaffirm these decisions and these frameworks. Next question about the funding of our organization and what we might call the transatlantic gap when it comes to defense investment. First of all, let me say that I think we have a very clear answer to economic austerity. Obviously, all governments are faced with budgetary constraints, and we will also see cuts in defense expenditure. How can we deal with that? The response to that is to cooperate and prioritize and make more efficient use of the resources available. We can cooperate and pool resources together and by that achieve economies of scale and make more efficient use of resources. It can be bilateral agreements like the one between the UK and France. It can be multinational cooperation like the one we have seen on strategic airlift, the C-17 transport aircraft. 12 allies and partners have pooled resources together and acquired 3 expensive C-17 transport aircrafts. Individually, these allies couldn't afford to acquire this capability, but by pooling resources together, they can. I think this is the way forward, to pool resources together, to go for collective solutions. And these collective solutions can, of course, also be a 28 common-funded acquisition of critical capabilities within NATO. So more cooperation is one response to budgetary constraint. Prioritization is another part of the response to budgetary constraints. And this is a reason why at this summit we will agree on a list of 10 critical capabilities to which we will give priority in the coming years and focus our investments in these 10 areas. So prioritization is also part of the response. Having said all that, it is of course a matter of concern to see the gap and the increasing gap between Europe and the United States. 10 years ago, U.S. defense expenditure represented 49% of total defense expenditure within the alliance. Today, 10 years later, the U.S. expenditure represents 73% of all defense expenditure within our alliance. It's a clear indication of an increasing gap, and it is a matter of concern because in the long term, it may create difficulties, at least, in our transatlantic cooperation. Because if Europe is lagging behind technologically, then the interoperability and practical military cooperation will be increasingly difficult. And honestly speaking, and this is a clear message to my dear European colleagues, honestly speaking, if the EU ambition to develop a strong EU defense and security dimension should be a real thing, then the Europeans should also invest a sufficient amount of money in defense. Otherwise, the common European defense and security policy will just be a paper tiger, to speak bluntly about it. So I think in the long term, we have to look closer into that. NATO-EU, speaking about this, what would be the effects if we improved the relationship between NATO and the European Union? Firstly, we would see more and closer cooperation in the field where we deploy assets together, like in Afghanistan and in Kosovo. We could conclude security agreements that at the end of the day also would be to the benefit of the security and safety of our personnel on the ground. So operations, that one area. Second area will be capacity development. And that's also about prioritization. We should ensure that we coordinate and cooperate so that we do not waste taxpayers' money by pursuing individual programs in the European Union, in NATO. So instead of having two programs, we could have one, or we could at least ensure close coordination. So as regards development of capabilities, we could also achieve benefits. And finally, on political consultation, we could consult with each other on the broad range of areas where we share common interests. Today, and that's a very absurd situation, the only issue we are allowed to discuss in formal NATO-EU meetings, the only issue is Bosnia. And while Bosnia, of course, is important, I could easily think of other issues of common interest that merited consultations, like Afghanistan, Kosovo, counter-piracy, proliferation, and other issues. So as regards operations, capabilities, and consultation, we would see great achievements if we could strengthen the partnership between NATO and the EU, and I hope this summit will take a step forward. Consensus. Yeah, that was also a matter of concern before I took over my post. I thought, consensus principle might slow down the decision-making process. And of course, sometimes it takes a lot of patience to achieve consensus. While it's not part of my DNA to be patient, I have learned the lesson during many years of serving in Danish politics, and that's been very helpful. And actually, We have been quite successful in achieving consensus on very, very important issues during the first 16 months of my tenure as Secretary General. And I think this summit will demonstrate that it is possible to take very important decisions based on consensus. It may sometimes take some time, but once we have taken a decision, then it is a strength that it's based on consensus that and that we move together. So what I have realized is that NATO is actually a decision-making machine with strength, and we understand how to move forward. And I could easily think of other international organizations where, well, it's a bit different. Then the Norwegian question about how to engage the young generation and make sure that we spread the message about the importance of international engagement. It's a good question. I do believe, referring to what I've already said about economics, and you related your question to the current economic situation. I do believe that during a period of economic austerity, it's more important than ever to cooperate, to find multinational solutions, to go for collective solutions, because together we can do more than we can individually. We need international cooperation to accomplish our security mission. And this is also a clear message in the new strategic concept. We will go for more consultation with important players on the international scene and enhance our partnerships. So in our strategic concept, you will see a very clear message to the young generation. Go global. So to speak, let me stress, NATO has no ambition to become a global policeman, but if we are to protect our people effectively, we need a global perspective, and that's exactly the message in the new strategic concept. The Russian question about missile defense. I think, realistically speaking, we can't start by merging our systems into one common missile defense system. So, realistically speaking, I think we should think of two separate systems, but two separate systems that cooperate. We could exchange information and data and thereby make the whole system more efficient and give better coverage. So that's how I see it. What we will decide tomorrow, together with the Russians, is to initiate a joint analysis as to how we can implement practical cooperation on missile defense. Iceland, High North, we will not deal in details with the aspects of the High North, but in the strategic concept we will refer to climate change as one of the realities that may have an impact on the overall strategic situation and security. And it goes without saying that when new sea routes are opened because the ice is melting, you get better and easier access to natural resources, then there are also certain strategic consequences. And, of course, they should be taken into consideration in our defense planning. But I don't envisage an active NATO role in the High North. We have a clear interest in finding peaceful solutions to the challenges in the High North. Green NATO, yes, indeed. I think the military should look closer into how they could achieve savings by more effective use of energy. It would be more green, it would be more cost efficient, but it would also improve our combat capability, because the less fuel we need, the more efficient our combat capacity, in my opinion. So it's actually one of the points I would like to pursue. And finally, on Central Asia, We will enhance our partnerships with countries in Central Asia. That will also be one of the messages in our strategic concept. And on a final note, I can assure you that UN Security Council Resolution 1325 has a strong priority, and actually we have implemented it in the directives to our military commanders. So it will be an integrated part of our operations in the future.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for answering all the questions and giving us some extra time of your short time. Your staff is there ready to take you. Thank you to all. Congratulations to the Young Antlesis Network and the Portuguese Atlantic Council for this very interesting event. Thank you, Mrs. Secretary General.